Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, March the 7th, 2014. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 7th of March 2014. Christine Aston and Fredina Hearn are our editors. And this week your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for today, Peter Lydiard, standing in for my wife Roz, who's indisposed. As usual, we'll begin with the main headlines, which this week are Officers Swoop on Sham Marriage, which will be read by Claire, MPs Praised for Multi-Agency Flood Efforts, which Robin will read, and Ex-Bursar Convicted of £18,000 Fraud, which will be read by Jerry. So, Claire, could we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Officers Swoop on Sham Marriage. Four people have been charged with organising an alleged sham marriage in Winchester. Immigration officials swooped to detain a French woman and a man from Cameroon at the registry office on Station Hill at around 10 a.m. last Friday, after concerns the union was a hoax. Two more people were arrested at an address on Winchester High Street just after 11 a.m. and officers seized a quantity of cash, more than £1,000. Searches also took place of homes in Basingstoke and Lewisham, South London. It is thought to have been the first time a marriage in Winchester has been stopped in such circumstances. All four have been charged with conspiracy to facilitate the commission of a breach of UK immigration law by a non-European Union person. The alleged bride has been named as Olivia Godefroy, 21, from London. She has also been charged with one count of bigamy and another count of doing an act to facilitate the commission of a breach of UK immigration law by a non-EU person. Also charged with conspiracy were alleged groom, a Cameroonian, another from the Ivory Coast, who is living in London, and another gentleman from Belgium. The four have been remanded in custody after appearing at Aldershot Magistrates Court last Saturday and are due to appear at Winchester Crown Court on March the 26th. Stuart Reynolds from the Home Office Immigration Enforcement Criminal Investigations Team said, "We work closely with registrars across the south of England to stop abuse of the marriage system by those who wish to get round our immigration laws. Where there are suspicions that a relationship may not be genuine, we will investigate and, if necessary, intervene to stop it happening." The operation was carried out with the full cooperation of the Superintendent Registrar. Staff at the Register Office declined to comment. Sham marriages or civil partnerships are often used as a means for people from outside the EU to gain long-term residency in the UK. On April the 1st last year, the UK Border Agency was replaced by the Immigration and Visa Service and an Immigration Law Enforcement Organisation. Anyone with information about suspected immigration abuse can contact Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111 anonymously or visit crimestoppersuk.org.
MPs praise for multi-agency flood efforts. House of Commons speech highlights stoicism and pragmatism of residents. Winchester MP Steve Brown praised the work of constituents for their response to the flooding crisis. Speaking in the House of Commons last Wednesday, he warned the crisis is far from over. He gave the House a full account of the situation faced by residents in Kingsworthy, Headbourneworthy, Sutton Scotney, Hursley, Littleton, the city centre and Twyford. Mr. Brine also praised the phenomenal work of members of the community, including David Sullivan and Angela Forder Stent of Twyford Parish Council and the rest of the team. Parish Clerk Sue Hedges and Councillor Stephen Godfrey in Sutton Scotney, and Harry Warwood and Giles Vigor Robertson in Headbourneworthy, who he said had basically given up work over the last few weeks to protect their communities. He said, "I am name-checking these people and talking about their community spirit because it shows the response that communities can give to the devastation that flooding can bring, which many members have described. The stoicism and pragmatism that I have seen have been remarkable. From the constituents I have met over recent days, I would say that the older they are, the greater their stoicism and pragmatism is, because they have seen it all before." Mr. Brine went on to discuss the multi-agency approach and the excellent work of Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council and the Army. Singling out the local environment agency, he told the House, "Mike O'Neill deserves a mention. He even went door to door with me in parts of central Winchester to talk to and reassure residents. He deserves great credit for that." At one point, water was flowing down the appropriately named Water Lane in Winchester, which the River Itchen runs past, at 12,000 litres per second towards the ancient city mill. That was terrifying for residents. However, the multi-agency working deserves our thanks. The agencies have played a bad hand very well. He went on to describe the huge roll of the dice in the lowering of several hundred one-ton bags of gravel into the River Itchen from the bridge of the M3 motorway to restrict its flow and flood upstream farmland in Easton, and saved Winchester, a process that had never been done before. But he added his concern about the bids that the Environment Agency has asked Hampshire County Council, as the risk management authority in the area, to put together for the six-year plan for 2015-16 to 2020-21, and in particular the feeling that this was far too rushed and was putting the council under pressure. He said he is very keen to collect as much feedback from local people as possible at steve.brine.mp@parliament.uk. And the article is illustrated by five pictures. One of the firefighters bailing out water from homes in Water Lane, a small portrait of Steve Brine, and a horse and cart offers transport to Hampshire Riding Centre along flooded Hensting Lane, Colden Common. And in two more pictures, a resident is carried to safety from her flooded home in Romsey, and Ronnie Cloak Brown and Wayne Lawton on flood duty in Hazley Road, Twyford.
Ex-bursar convicted of £18,000 fraud. A former bursar is awaiting sentence after she was convicted of fraud at the special needs school where she worked. Linda Whittaker, 65, swindled Osborne Special Needs School in Winchester out of £18,000 by paying a colleague for hours she had not worked, the jury found. Just moments earlier, she had wept with relief in court after being cleared of a second count of fraudulently claiming £54,000 for herself. In a case described by Judge Jane Miller QC as difficult, not least because we had so many reports to look at, the 9-man, 3-woman jury took more than 6 hours to arrive at its verdict last Thursday. As bursar, Whittaker of Loveden Lane, Kingsworthy, was responsible for a budget of £2 million, the court heard, and between 2008 and 2010 had submitted numerous timesheets for herself and for her colleague, Patricia Hickman. The trial had heard that timesheets between April 2008 and March 2010 had disappeared from the school archive, which Whittaker said she had nothing to do with. Whittaker has always insisted the overtime was genuine, and the court heard she also worked as clerk to the Board of Governors. Eventually, she approached the then-head, Rod Wakelam, and asked for Patricia Hickman to come in and help. Both Mr. Wakelam, from 2008, his successor Sonia O'Donnell, signed the timesheets and never questioned the hours they were claiming overtime for, said Whittaker in evidence. Jurors had been told that Miss Hickman stopped working at the school around the same time the auditors began checking financial records there in September 2010. "It's not right to say Patricia Hickman stopped working because I had been rumbled," Whittaker told the court. Judge Miller said Whittaker must return for sentencing at a date to be fixed in April, pending medical reports. The judge warned Whittaker of the seriousness of the crime. Osborne School declined to comment after the verdict. It is a school funded by the County Council for 144 pupils aged between 11 and 19. The school opened in 2003 following the amalgamation of Lankhills and Greenacres schools for learners with moderate and severe learning difficulties. Its most recent Ofsted report in 2012 rated it as good.
Thank you. Now, following those headline stories, we have death notices, and then Claire will be reading Christian comment for us. Day, Les Day, after a short illness on the 28th of February, aged 79.
De Santa Croix, Vivienne de Santa Croix, late of NatWest Bank, Chandler's Ford, suddenly on the 18th of February, aged 52.
Easterby Smith, Victor Charles Stanley Easterby Smith, peacefully on the 20th of February, aged 89.
Evans, Diana Patricia Evans of Oliver's Battery, after a short illness, 18th of February.
Forrester, Monica Hilda Forrester, peacefully at Brendon Nursing Home, 21st of February, aged 92.
Fuller, James Stuart Fuller, peacefully, 2nd of March, aged 77.
Peckham, Ina May Peckham, on the 30th of January, aged 88.
Savage, David Savage, formerly of Selwood, Chandler's Ford, 28th of February.
Thorogood, Maria Thorogood, peacefully on the 21st of February, aged 83. And now Claire will read Christian comment, please.
Which is headed today, Culture is Whatever Makes Things Grow. Winchester City Council recently revealed its cultural strategy at a colloquium that was open to all. Culture is a word used quite loosely, but a witty definition came from a speaker from the Arts Council. Whatever makes things grow. The cultural industry has been having a rough time. The council itself has had to slash its administrative budget by 50% and now operates over five huge areas, with Winchester coming under the southwest. In such circumstances, it's hardly surprising that culture needs to justify itself in economic terms. And so it can. We were told that for every pound invested locally in culture, there's a benefit of £6.15 to the local economy. Yet there are dangers with putting such a heavy emphasis on economic benefits of culture. Another essential element, perhaps the very thing that makes it different from mere entertainment, is its desire to take risks and break new ground. If the first thought of grant givers and sponsors is the immediate economic return, then many creative experiments will be stillborn. society will be left with chewing gum experiences that have nothing to do with being fed and growing. As money is short, risks will have to be selective. Fortunately, technology offers a partial solution. It brings new ways of thinking, planning, and creating together. The digital environment has become the place where many, especially of the younger creatives, can develop their visions and sometimes even deliver them. Given the large slice of time we all spend online, it's good that culture is making its presence felt there. But culture must also root itself in the fresh air. When the early church was challenged over icons being no better than idols, it argued that as Jesus had revealed God in the flesh, then so could wood and paint. Creativity cannot be confined to the immaterial. If we want public spaces to be more than shopping alleys, we must allow culture to interrupt our natural environment, causing us to change our mind about the world we inhabit bodily. We are all responsible in this venture. Lent invites us to be less a consumer of events and more involved in their performance. What can I take up that makes me a co-creator with others? Volunteering as a city guide, belonging to a book club, or helping the young to cook? In activities such as these, we find ourselves with others in the cultural fray and growing. And that was written by Canon Rowley Rim.
Thank you, Claire. Right, we now have letters to the editor, and we start with one written by Peter Jones, headed Combined Effort That Saved City. Sir, our grateful thanks are due to the emergency services and the armed forces whose expertise and physical involvement saved our city from serious flooding. Thanks also to the farmer who accepted that the flooding of his land would be crucial to the operation and its success. Without this combined effort, there is little doubt that the economy and structure of Winchester, as well as that of many homes and businesses, would have suffered considerable damage. Written by Peter Jones, Chester Road, Winchester.
New buses can't come soon enough, says David Selby. So Stagecoach is to spend £100 million on new buses. Could the users of the number 86 to Basingstoke please plead to have them as soon as possible, as the present fleet have had many breakdowns this winter, which has been most uncomfortable for passengers in this hourly service waiting in the cold and wet. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
The heading of this letter from John Peters is Don't Listen to the Bully Boys. So, global warming is a battering ram fashioned by bully boys. Ironically, James Anderson shared this insight with Chronicle readers on the day that the Royal Society and the US National Academy of Sciences jointly confirmed that human activities have been the main reason for a significant speeding up of global warming and soaring CO2 levels, with serious consequences for future generations unless decisive action is taken. Still, what do two of the most respected science bodies in the world know? Bully boys to a man. Ignore them. John Peters, Halls Farm Close, Winchester.
And after Claire's letter about buses, here's a letter about the bus station from Phil Yates. I must correct Sally Eames, where she states Winchester bus station was opened in 1936 by the King. It was, in fact, opened on June the 20th, 1935, and I doubt whether George V would have come to Winchester just to open a bus station, unless he was fulfilling another engagement on that day. The bus station accommodated Hanson, Dorset and Aldershot and District buses only. King Alfred buses used the area by St John's House for their passengers. It wasn't until 1973 when R. Chisnell & Sons Limited sold their business to Hanson Dorset Motor Services, National Bus Company, that their buses were allowed access to the bus station. I agree Winchester should have a bus station, but not necessarily the present one. In the original Silver Hill redevelopment scheme, there were plans to build a new bus station facing in the opposite direction, emerging into Friars Gate. But this idea seems to have been dropped, and Winchester, sadly, will go down the same path as Salisbury, which recently lost its bus station. Where will our buses start and terminate? As the saying goes, watch this space. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Data extraction delay is welcome. This is Dr. Nigel Watson writing. It is welcome news for both patients and GPs in Hampshire that NHS England have listened to the BMA's concerns and delayed the extraction of patients' medical records until the autumn. Data extraction will prove important for both improving the provision of healthcare for local patients and helping to make advances in the treatment of life-changing diseases such as cancer. But with just weeks to go until the uploading of patient data was due to begin, it became clear that many people were inadequately informed about the implications of the scheme. It is only right that patients understand what the proposals mean for them and what their rights are if they do not wish their data to be extracted. Dr. Nigel Watson, Hampshire GP and BMA representative.
And a letter from Roy Smith of Eastleigh refers to the decisions that defy common sense. From time to time, some decisions are made defying all common sense, such as that to close Andover Road, Winchester. Throughout the country, scores of villages, hamlets and communities are desperate for ring roads to be constructed, but there is no money for such expensive projects. A saving grace of the Barton Farm development was that a ring road was already in place, but unbelievably, a decision was taken to close this busy road, which will force thousands of vehicles through a large housing estate. When the consequences of this extraordinary decision are realised, will it be possible to reopen Andover Road? Or is there a hidden agenda in place? Roy Smith, Mitre Copse, Eastleigh.
This letter comes from Peter Rees, who is the chairman of Winchester Labour Party. How transparency has been destroyed. The decision by the majority party on Winchester City Council to re-examine potential locations for River Park shows how flawed the previous investigations and consultations have been. The Tories have been engaged in deception and duplicity in the task of replacing the leisure centre. An FOI request revealed that the leader of the council and officers had three secret meetings in June, July and September 2013 with Miller Homes to gain planning agreement for over 300 homes on Garrison Ground, Bar End. The strategy was to eliminate discussions about constructing a larger community centre. Because no agreement was reached and added to the farce of a public consultation, community and public pressure, this re-examination will now take place. WCC has refused to divulge its own statistics or to give full FOI disclosure on consultations with Miller Homes. It has now set up an informal scrutiny group which will meet in secret, report to the Cabinet and recommend to the Council. It will not be subject to the processes of open committee discussion. The transparent nature of all council business has been destroyed by Tory cabinet decision-making, supported by the Lib Dems. The two main parties are represented on this ISG, but Labour, the third group on the council, is not. The leader of the Labour group is chairman of Overview and Scrutiny. Who better to be a member of the ISG? Now there is a real opportunity for an invigorating approach to a new leisure centre, engaging the community to ensure the many sporting activities can be located in one main accessible area. The university has offered to participate, and with the possibility of open partnerships with commercial enterprises, including Tesco, a real sports and leisure centre could be established. The council should now find interested and active partners committed to create a much better centre of excellence than the very limited space River Park offers. Peter Rees, Chairman, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Future generations will pay the price, says Jim Malpus. James Anderson, letters February the 27th, apparently doesn't believe in runaway climate change and complains of the bully boys wanting to impose their renewable energy regime. However, after protesting at the notion of 15% of every county being littered with windmills, he goes on to say we could have low-carbon electricity from nuclear power at half the cost. So seems to agree fossil fuels are a problem. Nowhere did I express any objection to nuclear power. Renewable energy is unlikely in the short term to be capable of replacing our current levels of fossil fuel energy, and many well-known environmentalists now regard nuclear power as a perhaps unfortunate necessity. Whether it will be half the price is doubtful. We are paying billions to decommission old nuclear plants, and there is no sign yet of an agreed permanent solution to the safe storage of nuclear waste. The extreme weather events in recent years make it obvious that something unusual is going on. The insurance industry is certainly concerned, and a major financial services company last year issued a report which claimed the UN target of limiting the mean global temperature increase to 2°C was unachievable, and advised its clients to plan for rises of up to 4°C and possibly 6°C by the end of the century. Mr. Anderson talks about the sort of world he wants to live in. He's lucky to have a choice. If we don't get control of CO2 emissions, it will be a case of live now, let future generations pay later. Jim Malpus, Walesmead Road, Bishopstoke.
And this letter from Councillor Claire Welland of Headbourne Worthy has the heading Lengthman's Timely Return. John Pitman's letter, Time to Bring Back the Lengthman, February the 20th, was very timely, as I can reassure him that Headbourne Worthy has a lengthsman again. Thanks to a new HCC initiative brought to the parish council's attention by Councillor Jackie Porter. Sadly, it is not a full-time post, but we benefit from a few days' work per year, and some of the tasks that previously were overlooked will now be done, including path clearing, hedge trimming and gutter clearing. Indeed, Headbourne Worthy will almost certainly be using some of our lengthsman time to help clear up after the flooding. Councillor Claire Welland, School Lane, Headbourne Worthy.
A letter from Christopher Pankhurst is headed NH Reforms Are Cause for Concern. I was very concerned to read a recent open letter by Dr. Clive Pidell, a consultant oncologist and member of the British Medical Association Council, in which he said, I believe that market reforms and market solutions for the NHS are doomed to fail. There never will be effective NHS clinical leadership and the successful NHS reform until failed market-based policies are abandoned. When such senior members of the medical profession are deeply worried by the recent reforms of the NHS, people who are unable to afford private medical care should be very worried indeed. Christopher Pankhurst, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you very much. Now, if you have an opinion on any subject, I think we particularly welcome letters on Lengthsman because we enjoyed reading them so much. Would you like to write to the Hampshire Chronicle? You can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836, or email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, we have historical items from the Hampshire Chronicle, and we start off with 200 years ago. 200 years ago was March the 7th, 1814. The first one is headed, British Prisoners Escape Amiens. A British sailor who'd lately made his escape from Amiens reached town yesterday. A shipmate and himself became possessed of the rope belonging to a draw well, which they threw over the wall of their prison and so let themselves down. After much fatigue, they reached Bruges, and some British vessels being off the coast in that quarter, one of them conveyed the prisoners to their native land. Admiral Young, before whom they were ordered to appear, gave both the seamen their discharge, in pity of their recent sufferings and long previous imprisonment. Several hundreds of British prisoners have found means to make their escape. The second item is similar in tone. The prisoners unite in representing the very great difficulty which exists in obliging the conscripts to join the French army. At Nancy, about 200 were assembled in a body with much difficulty and were marched out of town by beat of drum, attended only by a small escort. No sooner had they passed the suburbs than they began to disperse, and the drummer boy was soon left with only the escort and about 12 men out of the 200.
100 years ago, March the 7th, 1914. Basingstoke. George Mundy of Church Street, milkman, was summoned for shouting to the annoyance of residents in Southern Road on Sunday, February the 22nd. Evidence was given for the prosecution by police constables Reed and Pryor, also by Mr. F. Ray, a member of the Congregation of All Saints, the latter stating that the shouting of "Milk!" occurred every Sunday and was a great disturbance to the congregation. The magistrates inflicted a penalty of 16 shillings. And the second item. About 20 minutes past five on Sunday morning, Police Constable Wagg found a lad of 16 wandering somewhat aimlessly about the Winchester streets and persuaded him to accompany them to the police station for inquiries. It was then elicited that the lad had left his home at Reading a day or two previously and made his way to Portsmouth, where he hoped to be able to join the Navy. But as he was unable to produce his parents' consent, he was refused. He was walking back to Reading when the constable saw him at Winchester. The lad was provided with breakfast and his parents communicated with.
And another two items from 50 years ago, March the 7th, 1964. The heading is "A Penny Per Hour for Saving Cathedral," and it's in the form of a letter. "I have read that there is to be a statue to William Walker, the diver, who did grand work in restoring the footing of the east end of Winchester Cathedral. I worked there at the time as a lad, aged 15. My job was to break stone flints to a small size to be mixed with cement, made into concrete, and lowered down by ropes to the diver. When the water got dusty, it had to be pumped out until it got clearer. I was one of the diver's gang. We had to work 9 hours a day. I myself got a penny per hour with no tea break." And the second item, the controversial scheme to build a rehabilitation centre for gypsies at Rownham's Lane, North Baddersley, passed out of Hampshire's hands on Friday last week. The Hampshire Planning Authority at Winchester agreed in principle to the County Council's proposal for the 3-acre site and decided to ask the Minister of Housing and Local Government to say that permission should be granted for a period of 5 years, subject to there being one extra year's permission if necessary. Members were told in the report of the North West Area Planning Committee that the object of the centre would be to rehabilitate the gypsies with a view to preparing them for occupation of normal housing accommodation in due course.
25 years ago, March the 10th, 1989. Fire stations shut by staff shortage. Lives are at risk in Hampshire because of a shortage of part-time firefighters. 70% of the county relies on part-time retained personnel to respond to emergency calls from work or home. But Hampshire is more than 100 firefighters short. Problem areas include Sutton Scotney, Droxford, Titchfield, Lyndhurst, Burley and Fareham. On one day last year, 16 fire engines, one-fifth of the brigade's entire vehicle fleet, were out of action because there were not enough firefighters to man them. There were 94 days last year when more than 10 stations were out of service. And the second paragraph. Developers of the Peninsula Barracks site in Winchester have been accused of promoting a scheme aimed only at the rich. The criticism is made by Mr. David Lloyd, a qualified town planner and architectural historian, who says the Lower Barracks scheme seems to have been designed entirely for wealthy people. Mr. Lloyd suggests that some of the homes proposed on the 5.5-acre site should be given over to a housing association. Arundel House Securities, who have been chosen to develop the Lower Barracks site, is proposing a mixture of apartments, townhouses, offices, leisure facilities and shops.
Thank you. Now we have Your Say, which is read this week by Robin.
Your Say this week raises the question, should the United Kingdom still take part in the Eurovision Song Contest? Cara Bryan, 17, of Avenue Road, Fulflood, student at Peter Simmons College, said, "Yes, we are part of Europe. I don't watch it anyway, so it doesn't bother me either way. But I do think we should be part of it." And Jeremy France, 54, a jeweller of Southgate Street, said, "No, it's stupid, and the whole competition is rubbish. They keep putting people in that nobody knows. We need to get back to the days of ABBA." And Mary Highway, 71, a retired personal assistant of Vernon Road Week, said, "I think it's nice to try, but I certainly don't watch it like I used to. It's got too outrageous and noisy. But when it first started, it was lovely." And Alex Andrew, 20, of Chilbolton Avenue, a web developer, said, "The only time I've ever watched it was when I was in Mallorca, when they seem to care about it a lot more than we do. I didn't really enjoy it."
Well, thank you, Robin. Well, after those four comments on a very important subject, we have the Hampshire Chronicle comment, and it's called "Trust the People at the Ballot Box." Efforts to devolve more power to authorities such as Hampshire are to be welcomed. The County Council is backing moves that would see greater local control over tax raising and borrowing, receiving income from stamp duty and business rates. The UK is over-centralised, with too much power resting in London. We should return to the 19th century, when councils had more freedom to respond to local interests and launch initiatives without being reliant on handouts from Whitehall of money that has come initially from local taxes. Council leader Roy Perry is right to highlight the discrepancy of Scotland and Wales gaining devolution, while major cities and regions in England are still hamstrung. Moves to centralise power have been happening for some 100 years. Governments of all colours reduced local freedoms, although it intensified under Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s. Result in rate capping and the current unsatisfactory system. If democracy means anything, it means trusting people at the ballot box to make informed decisions about whom they elect and how much they are prepared to pay in local taxes. And now we have the first person comment from Jerry. Thank you.
It comes this week from Judith Hennigan and is entitled Ukrainian Dumplings and Russian Champagne, and gives a nice little sidelight on the problems in Ukraine at the moment. My laptop is balanced on my knee as I write with one eye on the TV news from Crimea. The speed of events there is hardly unprecedented. Still, it is breathtaking. 21 years ago, I travelled to Crimea with my children's father and our baby son. We were living in Kiev at the time, and at the end of a long and bitter winter, we'd flown south to make a radio feature. It turned into a holiday of sorts. We peered into the conference room at the Palace of Livadia, where Churchill, Roosevelt and Stalin had redrawn the maps in 1945. We strolled along the seafront, admiring the vine-covered verandas and the gentle waves of the Black Sea lapping the shore. We were the only guests at the sanatorium where we stayed. The building had been the preserve of Communist Party apparatchiks, and the white-coated staff didn't know what to make of a Western couple with nothing but a baby and a couple of scruffy anoraks between them. One night, we ate dinner in the circular restaurant, a marvel of Soviet grandiosity, built on three floors around a central atrium. We dined alone, talking in hushed voices, our son on my lap. After a few minutes in that echoing space, he started to cry. Suddenly, two women in overalls bustled out of the kitchen, pushing the sort of trolley used for clearing plates. They approached our table, and before I could object, they had lifted the baby up from my lap and placed him on the trolley. I stood up in some dismay as they wheeled him quickly between the tables and through the double doors into the kitchen. But as I approached the doors, I heard laughter, and then they swung open, and out came the trolley, still bearing our son, with a bread ring in each fist, chuckling with delight. The kitchen staff wouldn't let us have our baby back, well, at least until we'd finished our cutlets and drunk a glass of sweet champanskoy on the house. They wheeled him around the empty floors of the restaurant, fed him every variety of Ukrainian dumpling, and admired his restless legs until he finally fell asleep, flat out on a pile of tablecloths. Now people all over Ukraine are confronting deeply held fears about freedom and identity and security. We have to hope for negotiation. What will happen next? And then on a totally different subject, Judith continues. Last week, I was lucky enough to be invited to two book launches. One for Stephen Boyce's wonderful poetry collection, The Sisyphus Dog, at Winchester's Theatre Royal. Time and again, I am struck by how writers need support as well as talent if their work is to reach an audience. If you are a writer aged 18 to 25 working in any genre, then do consider applying for a scholarship place at this year's University of Winchester Writers' Festival on the 20th to the 22nd of June. Details at www.writersfestival.co.uk.
Thank you, Jerry. Now, there's no Westminster Diary this week, but we do have a couple of Right Royal items from Belgarum, read for us today by Claire.
Watch this face. Only £158,000. That's the heading. The rich history of Winchester is well known to provide inspiration for writers, architects, artists, and now, watchmakers. King Arthur's Round Table and his band of faithful knights are the latest icons to feature on a watch face of a Swiss manufacturer in his new Excalibur collection. Roger Dubuis's modern adaptation of the icon in the Great Hall features 12 individually sculpted knights, with the king himself sporting a crown and aptly seated at 12 o'clock. But anyone wanting this elaborate piece may need to raid his tomb first. At an eye-watering £158,700, you'll need more than the good graces of the Lady of the Lake to help you afford it. Thanks to Chronicle reader Claire Russell for alerting Bulgarum. And another item is King Alfred was here, and don't you forget it. A letter reaches Bulgarum, sent from Q of Hyde, Winchester, on the subject of Alfredian acronyms, Chronicle February the 6th. Sir, the good folk of Hyde stand accused of nimbyism, referring, of course, to their backyards. I might forward another, possibly older acronym, Nickerby, with its slightly Dickensian flavour. So, in the future, would you please accuse the people of Hyde of Nickerbyism, not in King Alfred's backyard? I remain yours, etc. Q.
Thank you, Claire. Well, now it's time for what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks, and we'll begin this with music this week. On Friday the 21st of March at 7:30 p.m, the Theatre Royal Winchester is presenting the opera The Marriage of Figaro. More information and tickets, call the box office on 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. St Cross Church on Saturday the 15th of March at 7:30, there's a concert entitled There's Something About Mary, the story of the Blessed Virgin through choral music, including music of Taverner, Ivo Part and Lally, amongst others. Tickets are £15, available on the door or via www.romseychoral.org.uk. Saturday the 15th of March, Mozart's Coronation Mass and Britain's Rejoice in the Lamb are to be performed by the Southampton Philharmonic Choir in the O2 Guild Hall, Southampton. Ticket prices range from £9 to £20, and they're available on 02380 632601. That's 02380 632601. Or from the website o2guildhallsouthampton.co.uk. On to theatre shows. The Mayflower in Southampton has the wonderful touring production of War Horse. It's being performed until Saturday the 15th of March. Information and tickets from 02380 711811. 02380 711811. I can thoroughly recommend that one. Until the 15th of March, Salisbury Playhouse are staging Canterbury Tales, with performances at 7:30 each day and matinees on Thursday and Saturday. Tickets available from the box office on 01722 320333. That's 01722 320333. And one more announcement for you, lighting up times. Saturday the 8th of March, lights go out at 5:58 p.m. and going on again at Wednesday, the 12th of May, when the lights go out at 6:26 a.m. and light up again at 6:05 p.m. Now Claire has the first item of general news, so Claire,
which
please.
Which is headed, Flood Fighters Show Their Up to Challenge. Hidden away behind a Hampshire railway bridge is the nerve centre of the organisation which has led the fight against flooding. The Environment Agency may not always be visible at its Romsey base, but residents can rest assured staff are still keeping their finger on the pulse whenever flooding takes place. About 150 people work at the building, and every single one has played their part in trying to protect homes and lives from severe weather. The hub of that work takes place in an incident room which buzzes with activity as people tap away at keyboards and pick up phones, striving to keep tabs on what is happening where. On one wall, there's a map of Romsey, with blue lines drawn over the most at risk and affected areas. On the other side of the room, information about high tides and expected rainfalls is written on white boards, so that staff know when they will face the worst of what Mother Nature has in store. But all the work done across the county by the agency and its council, fire service and military partners is the result of years of planning, according to operations manager Mike O'Neill. He said, "All the planning we have done over the past 5 or 6 years has all paid off now, and everybody knows what they are doing and what other people are doing. Our motto here is, proper planning prevents poor performance." That's a good mouthful. "And if we put the effort up front, then everything will turn out okay. I'm really, really proud of our team. They spend all year practicing for this type of response, and they are out doing maintenance on flood defences or building new ones. It all helps reduce the overall risk. We have protected thousands of homes through the work we do all year round. In Romsey, our recent work has protected 300 homes, and in Winchester, it's about 100 more. Although residents are full of praise for the efforts of the multiple agencies, many have suggested the government waited too long to call the army in to help. But Mr. O'Neill said they have always had a presence in emergency discussions and came in when they were physically needed. He said, "I think the army came in at the right time. They came in when they were needed. They're part of that planning that we do when there is no flooding, and when we need that extra help as part of the multi-agency operation, we can call them in. Their work sandbagging areas has been really valuable. Having those resources to help has been so useful. The only reason Winchester has seen flood levels go down is because of the multi-agency approach. We've worked with the Army, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, the Navy, and Winchester City Council, and we've all had jobs to do that combined have solved problems. It was only by working together that this happened. It would never have worked if we'd all operated individually. Staff at the incident room have a range of jobs, from checking upcoming weather to communicating with colleagues in the field. For the past few weeks, they have been doing 8-hour shifts, working around the clock to keep tabs on flooding. Sally Taverner is one of the area-based controllers who manage the incident control room and ensure the right information goes to the right people. She said, "We have all been working really hard, and my team are passionate and want to do the best they can for the environment and the community. We have been putting in a lot of long hours, and we have been trying our best to manage the situation. It's very difficult because people are passionate and prefer to keep on going, but they get tired, and eventually I have to tell people to go home and get some rest." Flood warning duty officer David Gaskell keeps his eye on developing problems by looking at weather radar and flood levels. He said, "We have live feeds for this area and can break it down into catchments like the River Test or Itchen. We have lots of guys across the rivers who feed back the levels and flow rates, and we have alarms set for when they reach certain heights." Mr. Gaskell can also update the Environment Agency's website flood warning map that tells the public where the problem areas are. He added, "It can change at any time. We could have 8 warnings on the go and then find we can remove 4 of them. But then again, if the weather comes back, we can go back to the high levels we have already seen. Things are certainly looking better, but if that changes, we will know about it. Once the control room identifies an issue, it is passed over to the planning team to come up with a solution. Gareth Bates leads a cell of planners and engineers who put their heads together and come up with practical answers to flooding problems, such as loading 1-ton sandbags into the River Itchen near the M3, creating an artificial pond to restrict the flow of water into the city. He said, "It's been quite challenging work because of the pace, as implementation has had to be very fast. The M3 scheme happened amazingly fast, but we had full cooperation of the other agencies like Hampshire Highways, who were fantastic. What we have here is a group of people who can work up ideas really quickly once the incident room alerts us to the problem. Mr. O'Neill is not ruling out more flooding in the future. If we get a lot of rain over a few days, we could be back to square one. There's more rain coming, so it's keeping the ground wet all the time, and the levels in the Test and Itchen are being kept very high. If we get an inch or two of rain, then we could be looking at more properties flooding. But should the heavens open once again, the Environment Agency will be ready for it." And there's three or four pictures here showing how they managed it.
And still on the subject of flooding, farmers get together to help flood colleagues. A group of young farmers from Hampshire have rallied to help flood victims in the southwest. Chris Gray headed the convoy of tractors taking hay and straw to farms in Somerset after the National Federation of Young Farmers put out an appeal to help their Somerset members. The 25-year-old who works at Cadland Estate in Forley said, "I was sat at home doing nothing and thought I had to do something to help. So I put a message on Facebook asking if anybody could donate anything. And now we have 3 tractors and 3 trailer loads of straw and hay. Everything has been donated, even the tractors we will use." Junior Vice Chairman Mr. Gray left a farm in Petersfield in the early hours of last Saturday morning with friends Rob Day of South East Hampshire Young Farmers and Richard Morgan of Petersfield Young Farmers. The trio had spent time collecting animal feed at Vale Farm at Pitt near Winchester last Friday. "Because of the flooding, the fields in Somerset are spoiling underwater," said Mr. Gray. "If grass is underwater for more than 21 days, it starts to decompose. So cattle down there will not get any feed, and it will lead to food prices going up, so we need to do our bit to help. I'm excited, but I'm also nervous because of what we'll see when we get down there. We have about 15 tons on each tractor, so altogether, with the tractor and trailer, we're probably about 25 tons apiece. That's a lot of cargo moving at once, and there's 3 of us plus a support vehicle. We're all really looking forward to it." And the piece is illustrated by 2 pictures, one showing Chris Gray at Vale Farm, Winchester, and the other one showing Mr. Gray with Rob Day and Richard Morgan.
Farm shop recovering after £3,000 meat raid. Just weeks ago, the shelves of an award-winning farm shop near Winchester lay empty after £3,000 worth of produce was stolen. Now the family-run Beechcroft Farm Shop near Farley Mount is almost back to full strength, and owner Rachel Waldron couldn't be more pleased. "We've managed to get our stock back up, and we are nearly back to where we were," she said. "The farm is busy at the moment, and lambing season has started. It'll take more than that to take Beechcroft Farm down, but it was such a horrible experience." The shop, which Rachel runs with her parents Joy and Nick Waldron, has been in the family alongside the farm since the 1930s, and last year won the coveted Hampshire Life Best Farm Shop Award for its lamb, beef and pork, which is reared, produced and sold on site. Thieves emptied the shelves between midnight and 7 a.m. on February the 8th and left behind only some sausages and beef offal. The beef at the Sarum Road shop is hung for 28 days, and Rachel said it was lucky they had a large cow in the abattoir already, because otherwise they would not have been able to restock so quickly. It's still taking some time, but we've had so much support. It's been lovely. Our customers have been brilliant. And police have launched an investigation.
Sophisticated gang jailed for 23 years. They launched a terrifying raid on the same Chandler's Ford bank where two of their own gang members were previously shot dead by police. But last week, four men who took part in a masked robbery at the HSBC Bank in 2011 started jail terms totalling 23 years. Leroy Hall, Leon McKenzie, Clifford Griffiths and Caston Francis have all been locked up following a string of robberies across the South. Hall, who's 37, and McKenzie, 33, had only just been released from prison when they started to plan the raids, with the gang carrying out reconnaissance trips, Winchester Crown Court heard. The pair had been serving a sentence for being involved in a violent raid on the same Bournemouth Road bank 4 years earlier, in which two other gang members were shot dead by police marksmen. On that occasion, armed raiders Mark Nunes, 35, and Andrew Markland, 36, were killed as they tried to rob a G4S courier. In November 2011, a coroner ruled that they had been lawfully killed. But just days after the inquest had finished, the same bank was targeted again, with the robbers escaping with a cash box. A silver Volvo S40 was found dumped less than half a mile away in Shaftesbury Avenue. The four thieves had focused on G4S cash-in-transit security guards as they made their deliveries, including at banks in Gloucester, Bath and Reading. They stole £25,000 in the Chandler's Ford attack and £125,000 from Gloucester. In each instance, abandoned getaway cars were found near the scene as the group swapped them for clean vehicles. Hall, described by the judge, Mr. Recorder Nigel Atkinson, as the heart of the London gang, received 6.5 years. McKenzie, considered to be a principal member, was handed 6 years. Griffiths, 36, was sentenced to 5.5 years, but will serve significantly less, having already spent almost a year on remand. The court heard that Francis, who's 52, has been diagnosed with cancer and that he did not participate in the actual robberies, but accepted taking part in some of the reconnaissance trips. He was sentenced to 5 years. They showed no emotion as the sentences were handed down. The judge described the gang as sophisticated and said their previous criminal history added to the seriousness of the case. He told the defendants, "The seriousness of this event is self-evident. It becomes academic whether you were involved in 1, 2, or 3 reconnaissance trips. You were part of a conspiracy." Afterwards, Detective Superintendent Steve Black of the South East Regional Organised Crime Unit said, "This was a sophisticated, organised crime group who were willing to use violence and the threat of violence." And there's pictures of the four men. I don't think they look chastened, though, I'm sorry to say.
City leader to stand down. Winchester Council leader Keith Wood has announced he is standing down. Councillor Wood issued a statement saying he would not be seeking re-election in his ward of Sparsholt in May. He will remain leader of the council, but is standing down as leader of the Conservative group once an election for a successor can be organised. The retired banker said, "I do not intend to stand again for election in May. My wife is not in good health, and it would not be sensible for me to seek another term." Councillor Wood added, "It has been a privilege to lead the council in the past 2 years. I am grateful for the support and advice I have received from councillors, officers and the public, not least in dealing with the floods. I am proud of the council's achievement in maintaining high quality services for the people of the Winchester district, while freezing council tax and supporting the local economy through difficult times. There are several major schemes coming forward which will do much to resolve the council's longer term financial problems. Winchester has become one of local government success stories and has succeeded in blending the historic environment with a vibrant economy which has made it such a popular place to live. In recent months, Councillor Wood has been embroiled in controversy over the future of the River Park Leisure Centre. Initial plans to expand onto River Park have been strongly opposed, and the council is undertaking a review. His likely successor will be Rob Humby, who has been Councillor Wood's deputy for 2 years and has enjoyed a high profile in official civic press releases. Recently, two Tory councillors, Jamie Scott and Derek Green, defected to the Lib Dems, making the council hung with no overall control.
Poetry of Motion proves an inspiration for pupils. Winchester pupils have helped a former poet laureate to launch a new poetry competition. The children from the Westgate and Twyford schools were treated to Sir Andrew Motion reading poems at the Holiday Inn, Morn Hill, on Friday. The children were encouraged to ask questions, and Sir Andrew gave them advice on how to enter the competition. The Campaign to Protect Rural England, Hampshire's Countryside Poetry Competition, is now open to children who live or go to school in Hampshire and challenges them to write creatively about the countryside. It is free to enter, and poems should not exceed 300 words. In attendance were sponsor Gemma Lacey of the Southern Cooperative, Hampshire poet Joan McGavin, and Hampshire Life editor Elizabeth Barnett. Sir Andrew is president of the CPRE and is passionate about encouraging young people to engage with their surroundings. Whatever the meaning of a poem, its success has as much to do with its sound as its written sense on the page. His own voice was mesmerising, and he inspired the children and adult attendees alike as he read two poems aloud. He said, "The Palace of Poetry has thousands of different rooms in it, and as poets, you have at your beck and call a number of tricks which are unique to you when you are writing. Remember, too, that the best poems tend to be written by people using their five senses. Get that right, and you will be making something that gets people to say, 'Yes, that's right, that's what it feels like.'" Steve Bryan, MP, there with his son and daughter, explained that poetry has been something he's enjoyed since school days. Joan McGavin, the official Hampshire poet, said, "What a great idea this competition is. There's something for all ages, and we also have a Winchester Poetry Festival in September." The first prize winners will have their poem published in Hampshire Life and on the CPRE website. Winners will receive a framed certificate, signed by Sir Andrew, as well as a book token. They will also be invited to attend a ceremony in September for the separate CPR Hampshire Countryside Awards. Entries will be judged by Gemma Lacey, Joan McGavin and Elizabeth Barnett. The winning poems will be sent to Sir Andrew for him to read. For full entry details, visit www.cprehampshire.org.uk or like CPRE Hampshire on Facebook. Closing date for entries is midnight on June the 30th.
Night closures on major route. A major road near Winchester will be closed overnight for roadworks for more than 2 weeks. New drains will be laid on the A33 between the B3047 near Kingsworthy and the A34 and will involve full overnight closures. Guy Watts, Highways Agency project sponsor, said the work will involve the clearance of nearby vegetation and the installation of new filter drains, which will reduce the likelihood of flooding and improve safety during heavy rainfall. During the closures, there will be a clearly signed diversion route so that drivers can continue their journeys with minimum inconvenience. Overnight work will begin on Monday, or began on Monday, and will last until March the 24th. Monday to Friday only, between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m, with a full closure of the A33 southbound between the B3047 and A34.
Fears raised at Pitt Manor meeting. Dozens of residents gathered in Winchester to discuss a controversial housing development. The meeting, chaired by Winchester and Chandlers Ford MP Steve Brine, came as planning chiefs prepare to consider an application for 200 new homes at Pitt Manor. The scheme, which will include a new park and ride site just off Romsey Road, was given outline permission on appeal in 2012 after Winchester City Council rejected the plans. Mr. Brine invited planning specialists Turley Associates, developer Orchard Homes and St. Peter's School, as well as officers from Winchester City and Hampshire County Council to discuss the issue. Many residents remain unhappy at changes to the Stanmore Lane and Romsey Road junction. The safety of pupils getting in and out of St. Peter's School also remains a concern, as do drainage and park and ride management. Speaking after the meeting at St. Peter's Church in Drury Street, Mr. Brine said, "It is no secret many of us didn't want this area developed, but we have to make the best of it and ensure we mitigate the negative effects as much as possible and glean as much benefit as we can for the local community." The City Council's Planning Committee were due to discuss the application yesterday, Thursday.
Cash boost for Children's Music Centre. A Winchester charity which supports children with disabilities has been given a major cash boost. The Lanterns Music Therapy Service has received a donation of £3,000 to cover its running costs for another year from Winchester Roundtable's Cash for Causes scheme. Matt Russell, Community Services Chairman for Winchester Roundtable, said, "We are pleased to support the Lanterns Music Therapy Service, which helps children with varying disabilities and many with severe and complex communication needs. The service has a proven track record of enhancing the communication skills of the most disadvantaged children attending Lanterns." One parent, whose son is supported by the service, said, "Since this therapy started, my son, who has autism, has started to really develop his skills around communicating with others, and it's been a fantastic tool to help him build relationships between children and adults. It's made a massive difference to him." Cash for Causes allocates funds to good causes in the district from the annual Winchester Bonfire Night and is supported by the Hampshire Chronicle.
More than just graffiti. A Basingstoke artist is set to showcase his graffiti cum graphic design works at the University of Winchester this month. The new exhibition by artist Kev Munday will be displayed from March the 3rd until April the 6th at the Link Gallery at the West Down Centre. "The Way I See Things" is a combination of graffiti and graphic design, which Mr. Munday said was inspired by watching people looking at unusual objects and his imagination. Mr. Munday, who's 27, has been exhibiting his artwork for 8 years, showcasing in venues including the South Bank Centre, Selfridges, and Summers Place Gardens. He has also created art for brands including Walt Disney, Monster Energy, Graham and Brown, and Fracture Skateboards. I started my artistic career as a graffiti artist, Mr. Munday said. However, I have always thought of graffiti more as a medium than an art form. Graffiti taught me to paint very fast and at a large scale, and also to see any object as a canvas. I still regularly paint murals with spray paint, and am inspired by the energy and colours of graffiti. I think the university will be the perfect venue to hold this exhibition, because as well as outside visitors to the gallery, the work will be seen by students from a wide variety of backgrounds. I hope that my work can communicate as much to a serious art collector as to as someone who may not have been to an art gallery before. Opening hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays and most weekends. Weekend opening may be restricted. Email visualart@winchester.ac.uk or call 01962 827 578 to confirm. Admission is free and parking is available. Further information about exhibitions at the University of Winchester can be found at winchester.ac.uk/visualart. And there is a picture to accompany this, which is very, very busy with all sorts of things.
Describes it well.
Care Home up for award. A Winchester care home has been nominated for an architectural award. St Cross Grange Care Home on St Cross Road was nominated for the Pinders Healthcare Design Awards in the Regeneration Care Homes category, following its £4 million refurbishment last year. The home, which provides residential and dementia care for 64 residents, was awarded a £500 cheque from Pinders, which it has since donated to the Alzheimer's Society. The refurbishment saw the introduction of a dedicated dementia unit and nursing unit, as well as improving bedrooms and communal spaces. Terry Packer, home manager, said, "Such recognition highlights the fantastic work which has been carried out during the refurbishment, managing to blend the old with the new build, whilst combining the very latest interior design for the care of older people."
Lord Wakeham steps in for Cathedral Dialogue. A late cancellation by foreign correspondent John Simpson saw the Winchester Dialogues arrange a hasty, and by all accounts successful, replacement speaker. Mr. Simpson, the BBC's World Affairs editor, was diverted to Crimea and unable to appear at the Guildhall last Friday. But Lord Wakeham, who lives near Alsford, stepped in at the request of the cathedral's dean, the very Reverend James Atwell. Around 150 people listened to him in conversation with John Miller as he spoke on the internal workings of government, as well as sharing humorous stories about parliamentary contemporaries as varied as Ken Clark, Alan Clark and Barbara Castle. A former Commons Chief Whip, he is the only living politician to have been both leader of the Commons and the Lords, and was known as a fixer rather than a philosopher. Asked about the 1984 Brighton bombing by the IRA, he talked briefly but movingly of the night his wife was killed, describing how he was trapped under rubble for 7 hours and how he only narrowly survived falling the depth of 4 floors of the hotel. The latest addition to the series was announced recently as Channel 4 news presenter John Snow, a former chorister at Winchester Cathedral, confirmed he will speak on April the 25th.
Carbon monoxide warning from MP. An MP is urging people to take steps against the risk of carbon monoxide poisoning. Mike Thornton, the Eastleigh MP, wants residents to install a carbon monoxide alarm. The Department of Health estimates that 40 people are killed and at least 4,000 are treated in hospital every year because of carbon monoxide poisoning. Carbon monoxide is produced when fuel such as gas, coal, or wood doesn't burn properly, usually because of a faulty boiler or other appliance, or because ventilation has been blocked. An alarm costs about £15.
First aiders take to two wheels. First aid is now on two wheels, as a new team of first aiders have got on their bicycles across Hampshire. The St John Ambulance Cycle Responders will be on duty at events such as festivals that cover a large area with dense crowds that make it difficult for vehicles to get to a casualty. Each cycle responder rides a mountain bike kitted out with enough equipment to make it effectively a mini ambulance. And it is hoped that another 7 new cycle responders will be trained this month to join the existing team of 10. Peter Leach, South East Regional Operational Cycling Officer, said, "We already have a small team of cycle responders, but there aren't enough of them to cover the events for which we receive requests. Each bike carries a huge variety of equipment, from bandages and aspirin to oxygen and an automatic external defibrillator, which is also used to restart people's hearts." Mr. Leach added, "We are always looking for new volunteers who want to be trained in this role. We need people who have a reasonable level of fitness and are already comfortable on a bike, and who would like to learn how to be the difference between a life lost and a life saved. Anyone interested in training to be a cycle responder should contact Mr. Leach on 07747 766554 or email peter.leach@sja.org.uk. And the article is illustrated by a young woman riding a bicycle, and she is extensively covered in Dayglow clothing.
Coola Chesil. The Chesil Theatre has had air conditioning units installed at its historic site by Winchester-based Air Improve Limited in preparation for warmer weather. Peter Lydiard, building manager for Winchester Dramatic Society, said, "Last year, during the extended heat wave, temperatures in the auditorium for the first time reached 34 degrees centigrade. This was not only extremely uncomfortable for our audience, but also for the actors who were performing in heavy formal Edwardian attire. We are delighted with the installation by Air Improve Limited."
A little more on flood control. Is this piece saying that the Flood Control Centre stood down? The Emergency Control Centre in Winchester closed on Monday as the flooding crisis eased. Although the City Council will stop operating a staffed control centre at the Guildhall after 3 weeks, any necessary action can still be commissioned quickly, said a spokesman. The Council's senior managers will monitor the situation and keep the approach under review. Contact can be made via the Council's Customer Services Centre on 01962 840 222, which includes out-of-hours arrangements, and for the rest of this week during working hours on 01962 848 364. The Council's focus is now shifting towards recovery. It's considering how to remove sandbags and to clean up.
Air ambulance service goes to new heights. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance has announced a further step in the continuing development of its service. With effect from June 2014, the charity will be operating with an enhanced model of the familiar Eurocopter 135. The new model will also be a Eurocopter 135, but will be a greatly updated version meeting the most current technological advances. Tony Nicholson, chairman of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, said, "We are very happy to have been able to arrange this with our partner, Bond Air Services. The trustees are committed to a path of continuous development, and this move is the next step. Everything that helps our crews to deliver this vital service has to be good news for all those who depend on us." And there is an illustration of one of the helicopters above the text for this item.
Library launches appeal. Chawton House Library near Alton has launched a £10,000 appeal because of flood disruption. It has seen visitor numbers hit by problems with access, as the A32 has been closed at nearby Farringdon, as well as a lack of basic hygiene facilities. Several events have been cancelled, although the house itself, the Centre for the Study of Early English Women's Writing 1600 to 1830, is not in danger. The library has had to pay for sandbagging to protect the church and resource the extra man-hours to protect the estate. Opened in 2003, the library has a collection of some 9,000 books.
Well, thank you very much. That concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. A reminder again that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870370. Again, thanks to our editors, Christine and Fredina, and also to our hard-working copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you to our readers. Claire?
Bye.
Robin?
Goodbye.
And Jerry?
Bye.
And also from me, Peter, goodbye. Now, would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you have finished with it and return it to us as quickly as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Well, that's all from us, and have a very good week, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.